there's enough wind in North America to take care of all of our needs. The problem is that how much of our power mix could we have from wind? There'll be times when there isn't wind and we need other alternatives. Denmark at one point thought that the limit was 20%, and they were going for 20%. They made 20% at the beginning of 2002. They now think they can have 50% of their power, their national power, from wind. One of the biggest supporters of nuclear is France. They have probably the largest mix, nuclear mix, in their national power. They've just put an emphasis on wind also. They're realizing that they can't sustain this. Nuclear is expensive. The nuclear lobby says that it's cheap, but if you look at their assumptions, they say it's cheap if that 85% availability of nuclear, and that nuclear lasts a long time. They sometimes talk 35 or 40 year life for their nuclear plants. We're seeing retubing in 15 to 20 years. We're seeing that right now they've managed to attain 45% availability. What it means is that more than 50% of the time, the reactors in Ontario are not producing electricity. Pickering A has been down for years. At the Bruce nuclear plant, the Bruce A has been down for a considerable amount of time. They go down and they need a lot of work before they come up. When a nuclear generator goes down, it's often down for half a year while they're doing trying to fix the problems. So they say we can attain 85%. I say, show me, because they've never done it in the past.
The practical lifespan of a windmill, how long will one of those things stay up under ideal circumstances?
20 to 25 years is what they expect. Now, you reach 22 years, they suggest that's when you would want to put new blades on it. To make, because they're getting pretty old. I think that when you get 22 years into any piece of machinery like that, you'd be looking at the new technology and saying, why don't we replace that with one of the new ones? As time goes on, the turbines get bigger, they get more efficient. Probably in 20 years, if you were facing significant reblading, you'd be saying, let's put a more efficient unit on, because they're a lot cheaper.
How long has modern windmill technology been around?
The Danish started really working on it seriously in the mid-70s. And what's happened is that as the technology advances, the machines get bigger. And as they get bigger, they get more efficient. Whether the machine is producing 200 kilowatts or producing 1,000 kilowatts, you've still got a foundation, you've still got your electrical hookup, you've still got your tower, and they've all got the same thing. So that if you can build a machine that'll produce 2 megawatts rather than 200 kilowatts, even if it costs 3 times, 4 times more, it's worth it, because you're getting 10 times the power.
Has there been that kind of increase evident over the last few years?
Yeah. In the early 90s, the most of cost-effective machines were around the 200, 250 kilowatts. By 1998, the most efficient machines were ranging between 600 and 700. Now they're at the megawatt machines, 1,000 kilowatts, and they're testing the 2 megawatt machines. They're starting to come in. That would produce enough power for about 800 homes on the grid.
You can't put a wind turbine just anywhere, though, and get results from it. I mean, you've got to have the wind.
That's right.
What are the sort of minimum conditions under which it becomes viable to put up a turbine?
Well, I think the most important thing is finding sites that are acceptable to the people who live around it. There's people who worry about the noise. Modern wind turbines are very, very quiet. You would have to be within 100 meters of most turbines in a medium wind before you heard them. So that's not an issue. People worry about it because they remember some of the old turbines that turn fast and they produce noises. These machines are quiet. Another thing that people worry about are birds. They worry about them chopping birds. We don't give birds enough credit. You have to trick a bird to get it to fly into something. And a guide tower is much worse. When I talk about a guide tower, I'm talking about like a transmission tower that has guy wires. The birds are much likelier to hit the guys than they are to hit the tower because they just don't see them because they're thin. They don't hit the towers. The blades, they can hear that sound as they get close, and they steer away. So birds really aren't a problem. The worst place in the world is the Altamont Pass in California, and it averages about a quarter of a bird. It sounds strange, a quarter of a bird per tower per year. So it's not a lot, and they made a lot of mistakes there, and most people learned from it, and they don't have situations. I would expect that a typical turbine kills fewer birds than any house, because we know that birds fly into houses. We know birds fly into cars. Cars kill many, many more. So that's not an issue. So the one thing is aesthetics. What does it look like? And that depends. And if you're going to build a huge wind farm, you want to put it in a situation where people will accept what appears to be something that's industrial. But I have seen pictures of turbines in Denmark and in the Netherlands where they're along the seawall and there's a slow, graceful curve, each machine equidistant to the next, and they really are quite stunning. I think they look very good. I don't think you're going to see too many wind turbines in an urban setting. Mostly they'll be in rural areas, simply because...
You're building two in Toronto, though.
We're building them in Toronto because... it was important to show the viability of wind. It was very difficult to get the siting permissions to build it in Toronto. It was done to make people aware of it. They're very viable machines. They're going to produce a lot of electricity. But it was probably more important that it was close to the provincial legislature so that politicians could come down and find out that they don't make a roar and they aren't ugly and that they're really beautiful structures. I think they're much prettier than an office tower.
If you could write the Bible for energy production and consumption in Canada today, what would it say?
I would say there's several things. We want a mix of power. We don't want to be reliant on one kind of power. Power is so cheap in our province. But and let me say, it's only cheap because it's subsidized. We're going to pay the price. We've got a $30 billion stranded debt in the electric sector. And what that says is there's $30 billion that's been spent in the past on electricity, mostly in nuclear development, that hasn't been paid for and will be paid for over the next 50 years. So
by who?
By our children. By us, if we're still around. It was debt financed, and Ontario Hydro just spent more money than they could possibly ever make.
$30 billion stranded debt is a considerable amount of money.
Yeah.
So, what could you do with that in wind?
Each billion dollars would allow you to build about, roughly, in today's dollars, about 600 megawatts. So for $30 billion, if we actually put those $30 billion into wind power, we could close the nuclear plants, we could close the coal plants, we could have well on to 40% of our power available from wind.
Hmm.
And that would allow us to rely on the hydraulic power, that's power from water, for filling in the gaps. Because as the wind's blowing, you leave the water behind the dam. So the water levels are higher. It allows you to, on those days where you need more power than the wind can produce, you open up the dams.
Even if you had $30 billion, and let's be fair, this is money that isn't there rather than is.
Right. It's already been spent on nuclear.
But if you had that $30 billion, you'd still need to know where to put the windmills in this province. I mean, you can't just slap them up anywhere and say, okay, blow wind, blow.
The province has put a lot of money into doing prospecting for mining resources. What our government needs to do is, or what we need to do is to prospect for wind. We should have public money that goes towards doing wind research. There should be a atlas of wind resources that's available publicly, not privately. What's happening right now is a number of corporations are quietly putting up anemometers, studying wind in different parts, trying to get an advantage on someone else. But that's not public knowledge. What we need to do is know where the wind is the strongest. Now, first of all, we can guess. We know that the wind is strong along the lakes because the wind typically comes over the lakes. And as it comes ashore, it's clean, it's smooth, and it can produce a lot of energy. But there's a lot of other places we could consider putting up wind turbines. In Alberta, they've had good results putting it in valleys where the wind is concentrated. We don't know which valleys are good now. We need to do that research.
Interesting philosophical argument. Who owns the wind? Who owns the information which would govern our use of the wind? What's the role of the private sector in energy, in your view?
Well, right now, who owns the wind and who has the knowledge, it's not been defined. And what's happening is there's going to be a rapid introduction of wind generation in Ontario, and right now we're giving it away. And right now the knowledge is being hoarded by people who want to put up wind, and they're doing studies and they're keeping them private. So it's going to the private sector at this point.
The argument that nuclear has always put forward is that, well, from its earliest days, this was power too cheap to meter. This was
But that's not true. It's our most expensive power.
Well, they say it's what? 4 cents and change per kilowatt hour.
It isn't. It isn't because they fix the books. That's what it comes to. They fix the books. They say it would be that price if certain criteria were met. None of those criteria have been met. I spoke before. They say that it would be 4.5 cents per kilowatt hour if those machines were running 85% of the time. They can't get over 50. That has a big effect on that. They also don't factor in, honestly, how much it's going to cost to take care of the atomic waste for the next 250 years or whatever it is.
What part is Canada playing in the development of wind power?
Very little. We committed ourselves to hundreds of millions of dollars for CANDU research. Countries like Denmark put their money into developing wind. Right now, Denmark is making a lot of money. They're the world leaders in wind. They're making a lot of money on selling wind technology. What we need to do right now is put in wind so we don't have to burn coal. And it's capable of replacing our coal generation right now, today, without any new technology.
What would be the cost difference?
Coal often plays the same game as wind in that they say, we're cheap. They're cheap because they leave the real costs out. They don't factor in the cost to the environment, the cost to our health. The Canadian Medical Association estimates that between 1,200 and 1,500 people die in southern Ontario from pollution every year. What's the cost to that? What's the cost to our hospitals? Why don't we take those costs and factor that in to the costs of pollution? And a lot of our pollution, the largest producer of pollution in southern Ontario is the Nanticoke plant down in Lake Erie. Why don't we factor that in and say, add this many cents to how much you think it costs to produce your power? And then you'll find out that probably the cheapest power we could have in southern Ontario would be wind power. How do you sell it? Well, there's a lot of quotes coming in from wind farms now, larger wind farms, where they're being competitive with gas cogen, where you're using natural gas to heat and to produce electricity.
So we're in the 5 cent range, 5-6 cents.
Oh yes, very much so. It's going to take a while because right now, the wind farms that are being put up are small, and smaller wind farms are more expensive than larger ones. But you're going to see as we adopt wind is now competitive with gas. If we are fair about it, we'll find out that it is fair. It's cheaper, much cheaper than nuclear. Don't forget, when those guys say that nuclear is 4.5 cents, They haven't told you that you've got $32 billion of debt that's been built up that you're going to pay off. You're going to pay that off. That $32 billion is going to cost you more than any premium that you'll ever pay for wind. It's amazing that we let them get away with this, that they can sit there and with a straight face say that their power is the cheapest. They've worked up debts that bankrupted Ontario Hydro. That's what it really was. It was a bankruptcy. And the Ontario government, because they'd secured all the loans, had to pick up the debt. And they picked up a $30 billion debt, left $8 billion with the new company, and took the rest of it, and it's being handed back to us. You can't tell me that's cheap power.
Ed Hale, your fondest wish for the next 2 years in this energy game?
My wish would be that before 2010, we're producing enough power from other sources like wind, maybe some solar, demand side reduction, cutting down the amount that we use, that we can close the coal plants, and when we can start closing the nuclear plants. Next time when someone says we need another $2 billion to retube this plant, we say, no, close it down. It's too dangerous. We don't need it. That'd be my wish.